Today on the Sound Rider Show, we're talking New Year's riding resolutions right here in the Pacific Northwest. We'll get a visit from the Rainier Ravens, a local motorcycle collective, and we'll also talk about thoughts from millennial adventure riders. All that and so much more ahead on the January edition of the Sound Rider Show.
Support for Sound Rider and the Sound Rider Show is made possible by
Skagit Power Sports. Check out the North Sound's largest selection of bikes from names like Yamaha, Kawasaki, KTM, and Suzuki. Located just off I-5 in Burlington, Skagit Power Sports also features a large selection of riding gear, apparel, and an experienced staff to help you along the way. Visit Skagit Power Sports today.
Hi, this is Chris Fant with WomenADVWriters.com. Welcome to the Sound Rider Show.
Now live from the Crow's Nest Studio in beautiful downtown Broadview, Washington, join us for the latest episode of the Sound Rider Show, a candid hour featuring the people, places, and things that make up the fabric of one of the top motorcycle riding destinations in the world. And now here are your hosts, Tom Marin, Derek Roberts, and whoever else happens to drop by today.
Riders from across the Pacific Northwest and around the world, this is the January episode of the Sound Rider Show. Well, we're talking New Year's resolutions. We're talking new rides. We're talking about a great year ahead in the world of motorcycling. Across from me here, Tom Marin, publisher and founder of Sound Rider. And I, of course, am Derek Roberts, your co-host. What, Tom, has been going on in the world, in your world of motorcycling here in January?
This is the beginning of our fifth year.
It
doing
is.
Doing the podcast.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, and we're going into the 20th year of Soundrider.
I can't believe that. 20 years of being an online magazine. Talking about being ahead of your time, but how great is that looking back? All the great rides you've had, all the great books that you've had the opportunity to write.
I mean, it's going
to
be pretty satisfying. All the people I ticked off.
And all the good people you've met, too, though, along
That's
the way, right?
True.
There's a lot of terrific
all the
riders
I've met that I've enjoyed knowing
and... And we'll have a couple of those up coming up later in the show as we interview a few, right, from the Rainier Ravens. But let's dive right in here. Let's talk about 2018 before we move on to 2019.
A little recap?
Yeah, I want to know what were some of your favorite rides that you took last year.
Well, one of them was down on the Oregon coast.
Right.
And it was on the Sillitz Highway in particular. That was awesome. I'd love to go back and do that again. Another one of my favorite rides was doing the pre-ride for the Sasquatch Dual Sport Tour down in Oregon and cruising all up in the back behind Bend up there by the Three Finger Jacks
sure.
and all that volcanic area and seeing all the strata of the geology out there.
Right.
It's a fantastic area. So I think that's more kind of my two favorites.
Yeah, you know, one thing I want to mention on that too is obviously being, you know, sort of a dual sport and adventure guy, a lot of times in Oregon and Washington I head to the Cascades, but the Oregon coast is I think something that is definitely worth exploring.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's something that I'm going to have to maybe look at on my 2019 list. You know, I had sort of a little bit of a less active riding season this year than I had in the past, but I did still take a couple that stood out. In addition to sort of your standard camping and exploring, you know, forest service roads and that kind of thing, one short ride that I did that I really enjoyed was down at the Rally in the Gorge, and that was just the ride up to Cloud Gap.
Oh, I love that ride.
You know, it was terrific. It was a beautiful day. You could see Mount Hood was out and in force, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a great little dual sport
ride.
You
could see Mount St. Helens, and you could see Mount Adams. You could see Mount Rainier.
The vantage point. Yeah, and it's kind of a fun ride, you know, climbing up the mountainside there a little bit. It's
You get to those water bars, and you get your butt up off the seat.
That's it. Yeah, you got to do a little bit of technical maneuvering. But
And there's that whole stretch in there where they used to pull the wagon trains up to the Cloud Cap Inn that they protect. So even if there's a fire there, they go in and they protect that whole stretch so that it doesn't burn up and turn into rubble.
Right, and that's like the scarring on the actual mountainside from the wood wagon wheels, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's that goes back to like the Oregon Trail days and that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, that was another one of my favorite rides was down there in Pendleton, that ride I did up over the Oregon Trail.
Well, that is, you know, one thing that we talk about from time to time here on the show is just sort of the underrated history of that area. You know, mm-hmm. obviously you've got Lewis and Clark came through there, but just in general, some of the, you know, more frontiersy aspects of being here in the Pacific Northwest that don't get reported on quite as much as, say, your East Coast history from the early days of the United States. There are a lot of nice little nuggets out here.
So what's your goal for 2019? You got any ride plans or you got any skill plans you want to work on?
That's a great question. You know, you mentioned being down in Pendleton there, and I made a short list, and on that was I want to ride the Rattlesnake 400.
There you go. You know what? That's on my list because I have a whole article all about it.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm short on photographs, so I need to go.
You got to get out there. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll have to coordinate. That way we can get some bikers in action pictures while
April.
We're... Yeah. In April is when you're going to do it?
We're going in April. It's going to take us 3 days. We're going to have to ride out Friday. We'll do the 400 on Saturday, and we'll come back home Sunday.
Okay. I'll have to...
Or something like that.
I'll have to make a note on my calendar, see if we can't coordinate
it. It doesn't have to be those particular days of the week. I'm sure. Fine doing it anyway.
But that would be a great ride to definitely get out there and maybe get our pin, right, from the guys down at the Pendleton Bike Week. Don't they hook you up with a pin if you make that ride?
I bet we could get him to send it to us.
And then, you know, another thing that I've been wanting to do for a long time is just to ride up to Tofino in Vancouver Island. And I know you made the loop up there, but I want to go up there in the summertime and maybe do a little surfing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's you on the DR350 with the surfboard on the back? Is that what I'm seeing?
You know it. Yep, that's what I'm looking at.
You can rent a board.
Yeah, no, you can rent a board up there. But who knows? Maybe I'll do a custom rack project, and I can write about that for SoundRider. But those
and make that available through the Happy Trails.
Yeah, that's it. I'll talk to Tim. We'll see if he can't weld me something up. I'm sure he can. And then the last thing on my list that I really want to do this year, and I almost did it last year, but a new job opportunity came along, so I couldn't squeeze it into my schedule. And that's the WABDR. I've had it on my list for a couple of years now, and I've got the maps and everything. And I think I got to do it this year. I think I can do it in 5 or 6 days. So that's on my short list. But what about you?
Well, the Rattlesnake 400.
Yep, that's
on
the
one that's sticking out in my mind. I would like to go back sometime to the Going to the Sun Highway. I haven't done that for about 5 years.
So out in Montana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then with the road trip tour, might as well just jump into the 2019 events because these are rides I want to do too.
Right, sure.
So the road trip tour is on Vancouver Island.
That's right.
We'll be waving at you as you ride by with your surfboard. and I'm looking forward to getting on those roads on the motorcycle and having a good time on them. And then the Sasquatch Dual Sport Tour is going to be a backward reroute version of the one we did in Idaho a number of years ago.
Cool.
And so there's going to be some new roads in there that I haven't been on that I'm really looking forward to. In particular, that whole railway section of roadway now that's out by Lake Coeur d'Alene.
Nice, yeah.
Head south from there. But I love all that stuff down in there. It's beautiful. And unfortunately it's going to be in July and it might be a little bit smoky.
Well, but those are always the risks you take here in the Pacific Northwest, right?
You know, after all these smoky summers, can we get a little break now?
Maybe
can
this
we?
Will be the year. You know, it's been awfully wet here the last couple of weeks. Maybe that's going to continue and keep things saturated well into the summer. We'll see.
Well, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Rally in the Gorge, always a favorite of mine, and doing all the pre-riding is always a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Some of those roads have recently opened that have been closed, so I'm looking forward to getting on those and seeing what's going on.
But we had a few roads in the area that have been closed for a few years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Highway 30 had been closed for like 2 years now.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it?
So... up there around the Vista House and down by the Multnomah Falls, that whole section in there had been shut down for a long time.
Sure.
So we'll probably be adding some of that in as some of the suggested rides this year. Anybody who's never been more than once, what you want to know is we change the rides every year. So it's never the same ride twice in a row.
Right. Well, lots of good stuff out there. And, you know, we talk a little bit about getting some of these roads open for, like, you know, the Rally in the Gorge experience. And I'm interested And we talked about a little bit in some previous episodes about millennials and that sort of thing. But
I want to cover one thing before there, because I know you're going to the next topic.
Yeah.
So what I didn't talk about yet was a cafe to cafe.
Oh yeah.
And so I have the cafes picked out. And I'm not going to tell you what they are, but I'll give you some hints about them.
Can we know how many are on the list?
There's 17
wow.
right now.
Awesome.
So there'd be 15 and then two bonus cafes.
Cool.
Several are in the woods.
Love it.
Yeah. All of them have really nice roads around them, and that's part of what you get when you get cafe to cafe is you get that list of the cafes you got to go hit, but you also get a list of the roads that are around them that are really fun to ride.
Sure.
So we have a killer barbecue joint on the list this year.
Wow.
Just probably some of the best barbecue I've had in ages.
But that's not something you hear in the Pacific Northwest here too often.
No, and yeah. when you can get a barbecue place where the meats are good and the sauces are good and the combination of the two, that makes a home run.
Yeah, I would
and
say
I haven't
so.
Had a home run shop like that in a long time.
Yeah.
So some of them have very nice water views. Some of them have nice mountain views. So
always two highlights we look for.
One of them is at 5,000 feet on a lake.
Wow.
One of them has really killer almond pastries.
Is this one of those that's in the woods?
Yes, it is in the woods.
Wow,
almond
pastries.
But it also has a water view just outside of town.
Woof.
So it's kind of everything.
Yeah.
One of them is in a historic seaside hotel that was recently purchased and refurbished. Several are known for their trout meals. One is very well known for pie. And we know some of you like the pie.
What kind of pie?
This one has actually usually about a half a dozen different pie choices.
Ooh, so they're really professional
each time
out there.
I
okay,
go.
I like that.
One of them is a home to snakes, or so the name would imply.
Okay.
So that's 10 little tips on what's going on with that.
Well, I say you got great views, you've got great food, you've got great roads, you've got motorcycles. What more do you want, right?
That's why you buy a motorcycle.
That's it,
right?
Absolutely.
There. Cafe to cafe. If you did nothing else but did the cafe to cafe tour in 2019,
right.
You would have a satisfying motorcycling year.
I would say that I would concur with that. I think that's a great suggestion. And, of course, you can get that now. Is that available yet in the store? Or
It's coming up very shortly.
Okay.
It helps if you subscribe to our Facebook feed so you know when it comes up, or just keep watching our News Bites column.
Yep.
And it'll be there by the middle of January.
And if you're not an email subscriber yet, which you should be, you need to go ahead and sign up for
yeah,
that
absolutely.
Too, right? Yeah.
And we'll be shipping the packets in the last week of February, because you can start writing these at your own pace whenever
sure.
you want to do it in March. And you do it all the you can do any writing you want all the way up until the end of what is it, September.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got to, I mean, that's enough to fill your season, and not just talk about the inspiration that you'll get once you get out there and start knocking these cafes off the list. I mean, you put in a 20,000 mile summer, you won't even know it.
It's not that many, but anyways, yeah. You wanted to talk about millennials because you bumped into a really interesting article that talked about what millennials who want to do ADV riding are.
Yeah, what kind
what
of their
psychographic is.
That's right, what their expectations are. So this is an article from ADV Pulse, and I found this, you know, to be interesting because the writer, and I will pull up her name here in just a second, but basically I don't know if she's riding around the world or down through South America or whatever it may be, but she decided that she was going to start interviewing millennial adventure riders and motorcycle riders about, you know, what they wanted out of the world of motorcycling and what some of their expectations were. And she came up with 7 expectations of millennial adventure riders. And I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff in here. And it seems like the number one thing on the list was that people were, millennials anyway, were much more interested in experience over things. And I mm-hmm. guess I can concur with that. You know, again, I think that that is something that has certainly been my experience. And I think I'm still technically on the the outer edges of that millennial category there.
As I recall from reading this article, they weren't so interested in giant size adventure motorcycles. They were interested in practical smaller bikes.
Right. And there is a little bit of shift there. And I think some of that, though, some of that is just to be expected, right? I mean, when you are younger, you tend to have less income. So you tend to be more inclined to set your sights on those things that are achievable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that I think that definitely plays a part. And then I think that's also, though, starting to be reflected finally in the industry. We see, like, the Honda CRF 450L. Obviously, KTM's been doing a pretty good job for a few years. And the BMW 310 and that kind of thing, where it looks like they are trying to maybe trend in that direction a little bit more, offer some more offerings on the lighter side there. So, I mean, that seemed to make sense to me. What did you take away, though, from it being, having been in the industry for, you know, such a long time? Do you feel like the points that she was making in this article, do you feel like the industry is responding to those, that they're aware of those, or do you feel like there's still kind of a knowledge gap?
There's definitely still a knowledge gap.
Yeah.
Between the user and the manufacturer, definitely.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that the manufacturers are responding with enough models of smaller size dual sport bikes that are freeway capable.
Right.
You know, and I want to throw luggage on a bike, so I still need it to go 70, 75 miles an hour in
For
California.
Sure.
I could go, and I need that bike to move, but I don't want to have a 1200 GS. I want to have, you know, a 500, 600. That will move on the highway, but allow me to live my ADV dream.
That's right, yeah.
And what I took away from the article is I've always felt like an outsider because everybody wants to buy, you know, a $20,000 motorcycle and $20,000 worth of accessories.
Sure.
And I bought my dual sport bike for $1,200 used, and I probably spent about $1,200 a year on it because I ride it so much. I got to get tires.
Yeah.
Service and all that, chains, sprockets. But I'm with a lot of those guys in the article where I just, you know, I kept the money down, but I had the same experience as somebody who was in it for $40,000. You know, I'd ride up behind them on my little NX650.
Sure.
I'm having the same experience.
Well, and in a lot of cases, even more so, right, having more experience because you find that often to be the case. And we've talked to
– Oh, you're saying because I don't have to have three jobs to pay for that ADV bike, and so I only have to work one job. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, well, you don't have to have three jobs. You have them anyway, but you don't have to, right? You know, two things that did kind of stand out to me a little bit as far as maybe some differentiation between age groups was number 5 and 6 on the list, where 5 is being part of the community and 6 is that style matters. And, you know, I think that the community thing is something that has changed
dramatically.
In some respects there, because I know for a lot of people, the whole idea of motorcycling was to be out and, you know, riding by yourself or maybe with one other person. But it seems like now there's a little bit more of an emphasis of it being a social sort of gathering point. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, 20 years ago there was clubs.
Yeah.
Now there are these collectives.
Sure.
There's these internet groups, and there's not anybody really driving them as you used to have with a club that had a president and a vice president, a treasurer and a scribe and this sort of thing. So it's all different in that regard. What worries me about that is that without the organization within the organization,
mm-hmm.
I think people are missing out on some educational opportunities for riding motorcycles that if you had put together a list of maybe a few guest speakers for the year, that sort of thing, then you'd be offering the people that are in your collective a little bit more of an enrichment factor.
Sure.
Than what they're getting when you just say, hey, let's a bunch of us go out and ride around Mount Townsend this weekend.
Right.
You know, that's not going to really do it.
Well, you know, I feel like, too, that there's a little bit of a gap between some of the more established groups and some of the up-and-coming organizations. And I think we even see that, like, here in Seattle a little bit, where let's say, you know, a great organization like the BMW Riders of Washington,
mm-hmm.
very established, a lot of great people, people willing to share their knowledge. Mm-hmm. And then maybe on the younger end, you know, we have some organizations and some groups who would really like to take advantage of that, but there doesn't seem to be the connective pathway between the two.
Right.
And I know that a lot of the guys that are in the BMW Riders of Washington, they will come down and they will talk to you about motorcycling all day for a week straight, and they won't even stop for
until
water.
Until you can finally figure out how to shut them up.
Right? Exactly, right? And they would love to do that. And I know a lot of people, you know, on the maybe the millennial end in some of these organizations would love to listen to that for at least half a day. But there doesn't seem to be the bridge there, you know?
Yeah, the marketing isn't in their channels.
Yeah, so I really...
Somebody in the BMW club isn't getting to the Instagram crowd or something like that.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of different ways to do it. And that's actually kind of a hope for myself, actually, in 2019, is to maybe bridge a few of these gaps because, you know, I've met so many great people over the years here riding in Washington that I think there's a great opportunity for some cross-pollination there.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you. Well, listen, let's take a little break, and then we'll jump into News Bites, and I'm sure more of this will surface as we talk through the show.
Support for Soundwriter and the Soundwriter Show is made possible by
Adventure Motorsports, Snohomish County's largest selection of Yamaha and Suzuki motorcycles, ATVs, quads, and UTVs are available in Monroe at Adventure Motorsports. Celebrating a decade of top-rated sales, service, parts, and accessory support, hit the road and visit Adventure Motorsports today.
Hi, Al Brooks here from Surrey, BC. Lovely day here in British Columbia. Not to tell all the people that live elsewhere about that, but one of my favorite riding places is Central Oregon, John Day area. I go there usually once a year, twice a year, and ride all around the roads there. Lots of curvy roads for road guys and lots of gravel roads for adventure touring guys and beautiful scenery.
Hi, this is Chris Page from the Oregon Motorcycle Road Racing Association, and you're listening to the Soundwriter Show.
We are back on the Soundwriter Show. I'm Tom Marin, the publisher. I'm here with Derek Roberts, and we're into our News Bites segment. And, you know, we were talking in the last segment about kind of bridging the gap.
Yeah.
I think this guy is doing a fantastic job of bridging the gap. Let's all put our hands together for Travis Pastrana.
There we go. A little golf clap for sure
AMA
for Travis.
Motorcyclist of the Year. That was quite a feat that he did where he broke those three records. In one day.
He had a tremendous year. And I think this is a really good smart selection by the AMA. I think this is the right move this year.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
But it is nice to have some sort of, you know, even though obviously he's on the very high performance end, it's nice to have some people out there. Because I know that you have mentioned in the past where you have felt like a lot of the authors and writers and people that, you know, motorcyclists may have looked up to in the past, they're starting to age out.
Right.
So, you know, there needs to be sort of an ushering in of a new era in some sense. Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, and this guy has definitely influenced people all through his career.
Yeah.
It's like a 30-year career
now. He's been around for a while, yeah.
Doing crazy stuff. I mean, honestly, he's one of the guys on the very front end of sort of the hooligan dirt bike, you know, arena cross stuff, where they just do the crazy tricks,
yeah.
You know? And you can get on YouTube and you can go back and you can find those old videos.
It's
fun to watch.
It is. It's fun. It's crazy. And it's, you know, in some sense, inspirational. I might go jump Highway 99 after the show. We'll see.
Well, you just go up that little overpass by Seattle Cycle
Center. Oh, yeah, that's probably smarter, yeah.
Yeah, that help you to kind of get used to what it's going to be like up at that elevation.
Yeah, can judge the heights. That's a good idea, yeah.
Speaking of Highway 99, Backfire Moto has taken the old Moto International location on Aurora and is kicking it off with offering some motorcycle storage inside as they do a build-out that will do a coffee bar, and some other beverages, and maybe be the next Moto Hangout in Seattle.
It sounds like it's going to be a neat little Moto-centric, like you said, hangout. And I'm glad to see that this building is staying in motorcycling, you know, because that is a very popular piece of real estate there. There's a lot of opportunity for development. And, you know, I'd rather see it kind of carry on in some sense that heritage of Moto International, such a legendary dealership here.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, well, we'll see. You think they'll keep it orange?
I don't know. Maybe they'll have Henry come in and paint it up a special backfire.
Yeah, sort of some murals on the side and that kind of stuff. Yeah,
I don't know.
And just to clarify, too, that even with this new location, they are going to continue to do Backfire Moto Night down in Soto in South Seattle here.
Yeah,
so
and
it's
we believe that will start in the spring again, maybe about March.
Yeah, so you're going to follow their page to keep track of that, or follow the calendar on SoundRider, and we can keep you plugged in.
And we talked about this on the last show, that the Optimum Performance guys were going to take the Moto Guzzi and Aprilia lines over on the east side in the Kirkland area,
right.
And that has happened now. So if you go over, you're going to see lots of Moto Guzzis, lots of Aprilias, and that will grow more as we come to the spring, but it'll be interesting to see because we know their lease is up, so are they going to stay and build out, or are they going to move? We don't know yet. So,
well, you know, I'm just glad to see that this is staying in the Seattle area. I was actually up at the dealership in Ferndale the other day,
mm-hmm.
and I was reminded about how much of a screaming deal those Aprilia Caponards are. Like, those are really great value ADV bikes.
And you know what? Not so much – probably not my choice as an ADV bike. I wouldn't really want to take one off-road that often.
Oh.
But, man, for a road burner, that would be the ultimate little road burner bike.
I mean,
the right sitting position.
I think, though, if you do like 70-30 or 80-20, you know, if you're the occasional fire road guy and you mm-hmm. put some nice, you know, knobby,
yeah,
not
like
too
what
knobby
I do with my
NX6,
my NC700X.
Exactly.
You know, I just take it shortcuts with it once in a
That's
while.
Exactly it. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it like a DR650 or anything like that, certainly. But
So the Caponards are way down on price right now, huh? Like the 2018, just trying to blow them out.
Well, even they had one in particular up there, I think was a 2016, and it had it all set up for luggage and everything, and it was like, I think it was like $11,000 or something. But yeah, it seemed like a screaming deal. So just glad, though, to see that the brands are going to continue to be around here in Washington.
And speaking of people that continue to be around here in the Pacific Northwest, going on their 10th year this year, the One Moto Show down in Portland has a new sponsor. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Indian Motorcycles, which seems like a pretty good get for both sides, actually. You know, I think Indian has done a lot of work trying to reach out to the coveted millennial crowd, which we've touched on a little bit here already in the show. And the One Motorcycle Show, anytime you can do an event, you know, 10 years running, hats off, whatever you can do. So I think this is going to be a pretty neat partnership.
Yeah, and, you know, we said this, I don't know, back in the summer. I really like the work the Indian's doing.
Oh, man.
And they're just going in and scooping up all these marketing opportunities and cranking out some great product. And, you know, I want to see them diversify the line a little bit more, but they're hitting that scrambler crowd with the Scout.
Yep.
And they're hitting the cruiser crowd, and you know, they're making it happen, and they're taking these opportunities and taking advantage of them.
They certainly are. You know, they've got the new, like, the FTRs and the FXDRs that are coming out, and these are 1200 bikes. I'd actually personally like to see some lower CC opportunities of those same types of models that are in kind of that flat tracker mode, I think would be pretty cool from them.
So you're thinking like a 250 flat track from
Well, maybe not quite 250, but maybe 500 or so would be pretty cool. I do. You mentioned the Scout, though, man. When I go and I look at these Scouts, these matte black ones, it's a pretty good motorcycle. So
those are ones all you got to do is look at them and they start, right? You
That's it.
No key or nothing.
That's
right?
It, man. It's all mind meld.
We're starting to see pictures surface of the Viewpoint Inn down in the Columbia River Gorge, and I wanted to note it because it's a really awesome sort of motorcycle destination location. We used to use it for part of the rally in the gorge every now and then. It's been on the Cafe to Cafe event before. It shut down, unfortunately, after the fire. But the property got sold, so there's new owners, and they're apparently a bit more likable than the last guys that had it. And things are coming along. We're seeing pictures of it in getting wrapped with Tyvek wrap now and starting to come back to life, and I'm really looking forward to going there again.
So I am going to plead ignorance on the Viewpoint Inn because I don't have any idea.
I'll tell you where it is.
Yeah, let me know about
this. So you know where the Vista House is?
Yes.
So if you went up the hill and on the way to Larch Mountain, it will be on your left side.
Okay.
And it was used in the very first what was that movie? Twilight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was okay. where the class party was outside at night.
I can't say I've ever seen the movie, but
well, go watch it.
It's a motorcycle movie, huh? In the off season here, when you're looking for things to do, watch Twilight so you can note the Viewpoint Inn.
Well, it's not as much of a motorcycle movie as some others. No, yeah, it's not a motorcycle movie, but you could see what it used to look like, and it's going to get back to that, assumably.
Okay.
So it's beautiful up there, and it's right up off of Larch Mountain Road, which is off of the old U.S. 30 road by the Vista House.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's a pretty neat building, and anytime you can have sort of a unique destination, I'm all for it. So I hope that they get it back up and, you know, bring the life back into it. And when I go and visit there on my motorcycle, it's not crowded with vampires.
New product out now, the new Metzler Cruise Tech tires. So if you ride a cruiser bike, this is something for you to take a look at. What I liked about this tire was that the tread pattern was perfect for the Pacific Northwest.
Looks like some rain shedding ability, right? So good traction in those wet conditions. And I don't have any personal experience with Metzler tires. Have you ever run Metzlers?
Years ago, I used to run them on an old Honda of mine.
Oh, okay.
And they were okay.
Yeah. Well, maybe this will be the, you know, it sounds like they're obviously doing some R&D.
Well, yeah. Tire technology has changed a lot in 20 years. That's when I used to run the Metzlers before.
But right.
Nowadays, you got, you know, tires with a harder compound in the middle, softer on the sides, that sort of thing. So. See, we got okay. So that we're kind of going off of our News Bites feed here, and you can get that on SoundRider anytime you want. There is a link to a list of America's highest roads, and I'm happy to say I've ridden the highest road in Idaho. I've ridden the highest road in Washington. I've ridden the highest road in Oregon, and I've ridden the highest road in British Columbia.
Wow. So you've got the quadfecta there.
Yeah.
What is the highest road in Washington?
Highest road in Washington is called Slate Peak.
Okay.
And it's outside of Winthrop, actually outside of the Metau area.
Okay.
And you're not going to do that on a street bike. I mean, you could try it. I saw a guy do it on a Goldwing one day. But,
nice. Those Goldwing riders, I tell you, man.
It's a nasty road.
Yeah.
But it is beautiful when you're up there, and you feel like you're in the Alps. There's not – you can see Glacier Peak, but it kind of fits in with the rest of the mountain line there. So you kind of feel more like you're up in the Alps because everything, all the ridge lines are white, you know.
That sounds like a great road. Maybe I'll have to add that to my New Year's bucket list. Huh?
You should do that one this year.
I should definitely do that.
Because you know what? You could do it in a day.
Okay.
Or you could do a little overnight out there and spend the night in Winthrop and get stung by the bees.
Right. What's Highway 2 look like this time of year? Maybe I'll leave after the show.
Well, there you go. See, you could do the Cascade Loop and then throw in the Slate Peak with it.
Nothing to it in early January.
Yeah, right? You're not getting up there in early January. I thought you were being practical.
Oh, thinking gotcha. That maybe thinking ahead? No.
July ride.
That's. I'll put it on the calendar for July after the Rattlesnake 400.
If you didn't hear about this, you've probably been sleeping under a rock, but the MIC released data that showed, according to them, that women ridership was up to 19% now. We checked that against our own stats. We're actually at 17%.
Sure.
And there's lots of dispute about how the how the numbers were came to be and all that. But there's no doubt about it. We're seeing a lot more women writers than we used to. It takes a lot of work, takes a lot of friendship to make that happen. And I'm not going to say much else because we're going to have the Rainiers Ravens on the show shortly, and they're going to be talking about it with us.
But good to see the numbers climbing either way.
Yeah. Let's see. Got a new Harley Davidson book, coffee table book, History of Harley Davidson. Pretty interesting book. And I don't know, did we talk about this on the show last month?
You know, I can't remember. I feel like
this is where they cover a lot of the stuff in the museum that's there now that wasn't available before.
I gotcha. Okay.
So that's something to check out. We do have it linked on our News Bites page.
A good coffee table read, right?
Really good coffee table book, yeah. Saw some new models in the stores when I was out the other day. Saw the new Kawasaki Vulcans on the showroom floor.
Oh, now, cool.
This is not exactly a motorcycle that has thrilled people over the years.
That's true.
There are people who do buy Vulcans. And they got real interesting kind of a powder blue pattern that they did, and then a little lighter than a neon orange color with some special Morse code in the paint design.
What's the Morse code signify? Do we know?
I haven't figured it out. Okay. There's a lot of dots and dashes, and I think it's a secret code.
All right.
So if you could break the code, the bike is free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's guaranteed.
That's what one dealer told me.
Okay, I got you.
Some other bikes that hit the showroom floor this last month that are worthy of taking a look at, in particular, Husqvarna has two new street bikes. Now, why they gave them these names, I do not know, because you do need to learn a foreign language to enunciate them correctly, and I will blow it when I say them. One is called the Wittpilin 701. A lot of excitement for this bike because it's all new technology right in there. And Husqvarna has never really made this kind of a scrambler slash bobber style bike ever, but really beautiful to look at. And then the smaller version of it is called the Svartpilen, however you say that. That's the 401, they call it. A couple people are not too thrilled with the idea of that one because they use a lot of the technology from the KTM 390s
that
were made in India. And those bikes have been, what's the word, fraught with issues. So I might want to take a look at it, but you might want to maybe look at the 701.
Yeah, which is a little – it's just too bad because that 401 has a pretty neat design. You know, it's a good-looking motorcycle,
yeah,
you know.
Really good-looking bike.
But maybe, you know, maybe it's something to get ironed out in the next couple of years here. But
I will tell you that either one of those bikes is not something you're going to plan to ride 500 miles a day on because they're lean-over bikes. You're going to be leaning over on them just to get a bend in your elbow.
Right.
If you're trying to sit up and have your back be straight, that's probably not the bike for
you. You know, if you're going
to
have...
If you want to go to Backfire Moto and show off...
Well, if you just, or if you just want to have a couple of motorcycles, right?
Yeah, there
you
go. Exactly. So that's what we know in the News Bites. We're going to take a little
cool
break,
stuff.
And we'll come back and we'll do the calendar.
Support for Soundwriter and the Soundwriter Show is made possible by...
The Rally in the Gorge. Are you ready to go beyond the main roads? Since 2003, the Rally in the Gorge has introduced riders intimately to the awesome secondary and tertiary roads in the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area. With programs for dual sport, adventure, sport touring, and sport bike enthusiasts, this is the rally you'll want to return to again and again. For more information, visit soundrider.com/rally.
Hi, I'm Jim from Seattle. My primary bike is the Triumph Explorer 1200. My favorite riding is in northern British Columbia.
This is Jose Mateu with Skagit Power Sports, and you're listening to the Sound Rider Show.
Sound Rider Show, and rolling into the calendar segment, where it's a pretty hot start here in January. We've got some good events coming up right off the bat in the calendar, and it's going to build into a pretty good spring, too. So why don't we get started on the 5th right here in Washington?
On the 5th of July, or, oh, it's not July. So you said it was hot start, I did, yeah. So I thought it was July.
I set you really up for January. Failure there, yeah. Cold start here on the calendar.
All right, on the 5th of January, we've got short tracking at the Puyallup Fairgrounds, and they will be repeating that one. I thought, no, I guess not. Somebody's got two events going on.
Yeah, I think that is... the Arena Cross, right?
There's Arena Cross going on. Okay, so then on the 6th at Riverdale down in Toutle, there's a motocross series that's running down there. If it's raining, go if you're a competitor. If it's not raining, go as a spectator.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion. Some fun viewing there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, down at the motocross series.
And, these are young kids that are – working at it, you know. I know, Scott Moon out at Moon Motorcycles.
Sure.
His daughter, she races down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, cool.
So you might see Ellie down there whipping around the track. Let's see. A new abate chapter has started down in Goldendale, Washington. It's their Columbia River Gorge chapter. And they'll be doing their meetings on the 2nd, I think it's Wednesday of every month. So the first one's on the 10th. That'd be Thursday.
Did they just start?
Yeah.
This is brand new, huh? This chapter. Okay.
So
good for them.
If you're down there in the gorge with all our other 70,000 listeners, make sure you go. You can link to more information about that on our calendar page online. On the 12th, Saturday, is a suspension clinic that's happening at the KFG Racing Clubhouse down in Auburn. If you're not sure, if you don't know who KFG Racing is, it's a sort of an aftermarket service shop that does modifications for a lot of race bikes. So, but they'll do other bikes as well.
Yeah, I think I've seen some dual sports down there too, and that kind of stuff. So I think he kind of touches it all.
And then, you're right. We got 2 weekends of Northwest Arena Cross happening up at the Evergreen State Fairgrounds in Monroe. First one's going to be the 12th and 13th, and the second one's going to be the 19th and the 20th. On the 18th, which is Friday, through the 20th, Sunday, is the Vancouver, BC Motorcycle Show. You and I went last year.
Yeah, we did.
Are we going this year?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we should talk about that.
We'll sort that out.
Yeah, see what Cody Dale is doing.
Yeah. Let's see. And then if you're not going to go to Vancouver BC show, instead you could like pack all your warm gear and head down to the snow camp on the south side of Mount Rainier that'll be happening at the horse camp there. That's always fun.
Or you go to the Vancouver BC show, you pick up some new gear, and then you ride down to snow camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, pack it all in.
Well, I hope they sell lots of down and microfiber
and waterproof.
It could be cold. Let's see, on the 25th through the 27th this year, so this is 3 nights, the PDX Film Fest will be happening. That's a fundraiser for the Air Fence down at OMRA. And I haven't seen the lineup of the movies yet.
No. Have you been to the PDX Film Festival?
I have not.
I was going to go last year, and it didn't work out. Maybe this will be the year, because I'm very interested to see what they've got going on down there.
I bought tickets 1 year, and then I couldn't go.
Oh, yeah. That was 2 or 3 years ago.
Gave them to a writer friend of ours.
Yeah.
Now, coming up in February on the 8th, it's going to be the One Motorcycle Show down in Portland. We talked a little bit about that earlier.
We alluded to that in News Bites, yeah.
These are February events that we're letting you know about so that you mark them in your calendar. February 16th, ice racing happening at Angel of the Winds Arena. So let's just be clear. There is Angel of the Winds Casino, which is up off of I-5 outside of Arlington.
Right.
But that is not where the ice racing is happening. The ice racing is actually happening in Everett at the old Comcast Arena.
Yes, that's right. The old Comcast/Xfinity Arena. I think there is even still a little bit of branding left over there. But
So I'm hoping that the racers get the message that it's in Everett and they don't all pull up in front of Angel of the Winds Casino.
Well, I'm hoping that the ice guys get the message and they don't all deliver their ice to the casino.
Yeah. Yeah. And the friends up at Skagit Power Sports told me to remind everybody, if you want to get your studs, get them early because they always sell out of studs. And this is something that anybody locally can go and race in. Not that I would want to.
Well, you know, I feel like that SL350, you haven't taken it for a spin in a while. It'd be a good ice racer.
Put some screws in that puppy and go. And then in coming up in March, you got the Inland Motorcycle Show and Sale out in Spokane, Washington. That'll be March 15th through the 18th. And a new event that's coming up on the 30th of March. Mark your calendars. Soundwriter Day up at Skagit Power Sports. We'll be doing seminars. We're going to have a chili feed. We're going to make some maps of some of our favorite rides around that area in the Skagit Valley. And there's more. We just haven't figured it all out.
Yeah, we've got a few months to iron out the details. But really, what more do you need? You can learn about some of the best rides in the Pacific Northwest and eat chili in March. I mean, come on. Like, that's a good way to kick off the riding season, right?
Yeah, and just so people know, we make our chili organic. So even if even if there's a problem with gas, you won't smell a thing.
Maybe
plus we're the motorcycle shop.
I was going to say some exhaust. Yeah. Now this is, to be clear though, this is award winning chili, right? Your chili is won.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It won an award.
The award.
Yeah.
So
don't miss that. Yeah.
All right, well, that's our calendar, and we're keeping it short because we have some special guests coming up from the Rainier Ravens right after this.
Support for Soundwriter and the Soundwriter Show is made possible by
Moon Motorcycles, a family-run operation located in Issaquah, Washington. Moon Motorcycles features a diverse selection of used bikes to choose from. Whether you're shopping for a used sport bike, cruiser, dual sport, sport touring, or street standard, you owe it to yourself to visit Moon Motorcycles and look over their large inventory. Have you got a used bike you want to consign? Get in touch with Moon Motorcycles today.
Hi, I'm Ray Coop. I'm from Surrey, BC. And one of my favorite roads is probably Curly Creek Road, which runs up towards Mount St. Helens between Wind River Road.
Hello, this is Peter Starr, the director of Take It to the Limit, and you're listening to The Soundwriter Show.
We're back on the Soundwriter Show, and I'm Tom Marin, the publisher. I'm here with Derek Roberts, the utility man.
There we go. That's right.
Yeah. And interesting facts came out from the MIC in December about the ridership of women in the U.S. rising to 19% according to their stats. And we thought, hey, let's get some women in here who might know something about that locally. So we've invited a few members of the Rainier Ravens to join us. We have Ann here, and we have Lisa.
Yeah, guys, thanks so much for coming in today and chatting with us, not just about the Rainier Ravens, but kind of some of the demographic shifts that we have seen over the last couple of years. Why don't we start? Why don't we we'll go to you first, Ann, and just tell us a little bit about your riding history, how you got into riding, and then we'll turn it over to Lisa for that same question. But Ann, what's your start in motorcycling like?
So it's been an adventure. I have ridden on motorcycles since my early 20s, cool. But mostly on the back. And I went on the Oyster Run with my husband, who had just modified his BMW.
Nice.
And the seat was very, very tiny. And it was probably the most uncomfortable ride in traffic on the way from the Oyster, from Anacortes back to Edmonds.
Sure.
And I got off the bike at the end and I was like, that's it. Like, I'm done being on the back. I need to be on my own.
Get my own motorcycle. Yeah.
Exactly.
And if probably not go to the Oyster Run again.
If I'm going to be uncomfortable, I at least might as well be on my own motorcycle,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. I wanted to put my feet down. I wanted to go at my own pace.
Nice.
I wanted to turn I felt it. And I was like, this is the time that I need to do that.
The siren call of motorcycling,
exactly,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. And so I started doing that. I went on my first solo campout ride that summer. I rode down to Dream Roll all by myself, not
awesome.
Knowing a soul.
Dream Roll in Oregon, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually was in Trout Lake, Washington.
Oh, sorry, it was Mount Adams.
Yep. Oh, okay, right on. I didn't realize. I guess that does rotate, huh?
Yep.
Well, now they do it down in Oregon, but they were doing it up at the Mount Adams.
Okay, yeah, a little change there, sure.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So I rode. It was my first solo freeway ride. I got lost in the mountains. Thankfully, I had my Biltwell map and a compass, and I found my way back.
There's a bonus tip and trick for the end of the show, right? Always bring your map and your compass. Just in case
you end up thinking, I'm not on the right road. It's gorgeous, but I'm not on the right road.
You got to get home eventually.
And all of a sudden,
right?
The pavement ended, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it went to dirt, and I was like, oh, here I am.
Another skill set, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that's awesome. It sounds like you kind of dove right into it. So that's a great start. And what about you, Lisa? How did you get into motorcycling?
The first time I ever rode a bike, I didn't ride it myself, but I was 8 years old, and my neighbor across the street had a Harley, and I had wanted to ride on that thing since I was maybe five.
Awesome.
And he wouldn't let me until I was old enough to reach the pegs, and so I finally was old enough, and he took me for a ride around the neighborhood, and I was just like, this is the coolest thing ever. And I've been fascinated by motorcycles ever since, but strangely, it wasn't until about 5 years ago.
Are you saying that you were 8 years old and he didn't let you ride it yourself?
I know, shocking.
Yeah, come on.
I was definitely tall enough. I don't understand what the problem was. But it wasn't until about 5 years ago, a friend of mine had just gotten a BMW R9T, and I wanted to ride on it. And so I jumped on the back. He took me for a little ride, and we got back to his place. I got off. I said, well, I'm never doing that again. I'm only ever going to ride my own.
Like it.
Because I was so... It just didn't feel right being on the back.
Why be a passenger?
Nothing against people who like to ride on the back. It just wasn't for me. And I think maybe that week I signed up for a basic rider's class. And I went and found a bike in Anacortes that I absolutely loved, a 250 Suzuki TU250.
Oh, those are great starter bikes.
Love.
Yeah, beautiful
and,
bikes.
Just started riding and can't stop.
Well, now we know how to grow the industry again.
That's right, yeah.
It's your New Year's resolution. You take somebody who's never been on a motorcycle on the back of yours for a ride, and you take them somewhere like the Anacortes to ride. Let them know how that is on the back of the bike.
And, that's a new
campaign.
And
you know how many new riders we're going to get in 2020 by doing that? It'd be
I
awesome.
Think that's an excellent suggestion, especially considering the types of motorcycles that you and I ride. I think not very passenger-centric.
Not comfortable.
So, yeah.
Just sit on the back of my SL350.
Exactly. Well, those are great starts, but let's dive forward here now because the Rainier Ravens is a club that is in the area, and it is it exclusively for female riders, or, I mean, what is the build-out of the Rainier Ravens? Tell us a little bit about the organization, I guess, so we can kind of get a little more informed.
Well, we like to call ourselves a collective, not necessarily a club, because we're not a motorcycle club per se. Like, we don't follow those rules or anything. So we call ourselves a collective.
Makes sense.
And we're for all women riders or those who identify themselves as female riders. And really, all you need to do is love to ride and want to come and be with us and have a good time. There are not a lot of requirements for being a Raven.
Sure.
And that really was the original intent of the club. The club was founded by four women here in the Seattle area who wanted to have a safe space for women to come and learn to love motorcycling if they didn't already. And the idea was that you could come and be with women who love to ride, ride with them, learn about wrenching, do all those things that sometimes can be incredibly terrifying from the outside. A lot of women learn to ride with their significant other.
Right.
And don't necessarily have a lot of other women to ride with. And it can be pretty scary sometimes to attempt to do these motorcycle-y things if you don't have an in.
Yeah.
And having that safe space with other women to gather as a tribe, really, around something that we love is something that is pretty, I think, unique to this area.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's something that is kind of universal just to anybody who gets into motorcycling when they have somebody else sort of in their orbit where there is a big experience discrepancy, right? Like, you feel like you need to have 20 years of experience on your first day of riding, and that can be overwhelming for anybody.
Definitely.
So when you have a club or an organization or a collective where people can kind of come together and break down some of those walls, and that's the intent of it. I think that that's a fantastic way to do it. What was your experience getting started, Anne, in the Ravens? Did you kind of just, you know, obviously you had some your significant other was interested in motorcycling, but how did you come to join the organization?
Right, it was just happenstance, honestly. Yeah. I mean, it was pouring down rain one night, and I ended up under a tarp to cover myself from the pouring rain and
rain gear.
I didn't have any rain gear with me that night. I was talking to other women that were there about what they were doing for the group ride the next day. And some girls that I had met before were going to go up to the waterfalls, which was this great ride and a beautiful, item. And one of the girls, Christine, came up to me. She's like, "You mentioned that you're a new rider, and 8 girls dropped their bikes there last year." And
wow.
She's like, "Do your own ride, do your own thing. You know how you ride. But as an experienced rider, I just want to give you some guidance that maybe that might not be the best ride for you."
Sure.
That road was crap.
It was horrible.
So many potholes. Right. Yeah. It was awful. It was an awful road.
And
where are the waterfalls at?
It's up,
is it road 25?
Yeah.
Or 28? Out of Trout Lake, you go up and around this pothole-ridden, it's an awful road.
Is it Lewis Falls?
Yeah, Lower Lewis Falls, something like that.
Okay.
So yeah. It sounds a little bit more like a dual sport ride.
It was, you know, experienced riders, if you were going to ride in a group and you don't know the signals, or you don't know how people are going to be calling out, you've never ridden with these people before.
Sure.
They were just, you know, she was just saying, "Hey, you know, you might want to go on a different one." And another girl, Sarah Jane, came over and she was like, you know, she'd just been in a motorcycle accident, but she wanted to go and experience it with everybody. So she drove out to the event to just be there. And she said, "You know, I have an extra spot in my car. If you still want to experience being out of the waterfalls with everybody, why don't you just ride with us?" And I'd never met her before.
Wow.
At all. And she rides with the Ravens. And she just introduced me to everybody. And all of a sudden, one of the other girls was like, "Hey, how long you been with the Ravens?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm not, you know," like I was all, you know, scared. And she's like, "Oh, no. Now you are.
Now you are." Just yeah. Like that. Yeah.
And it's kind of one of those things where all you have to do is show up. And you can ride with anybody. You can ask anybody questions. It's like Lisa was saying, it's more of a safe space, but it's really a place where you're allowed to be vulnerable.
Right.
And you don't get that unique and genuine relationship in many circles, especially here in Seattle. And to just be able to walk in and be like, "I don't know anything." And it's okay. And experienced riders aren't judging you for that. They're like, "Hey."
Everybody gathers around and says, let's get you up to speed then.
Exactly. Yeah. In a non-threatening way. It's just, it's very supportive and uplifting and encouraging.
So it sounds like the way, if you do want to get involved, if we have listeners out there who, you know, may have people who want to get involved with the Ravens, or if they themselves want to get involved with the Ravens, if you identify as a woman, just kind of show up at an event. And boom, you're in. Start talking motorcycling, and that's all it takes.
Yeah, I mean, we have a Facebook page that has all of our events listed. We have a website that has everything listed. They can email us or message us if they have any questions. I'm the one that answers those. And most of the time people ask, "What do I need to do to become a Raven or to get to know you guys?" Just like Anne said, just show up.
Right, so no iron butt rides
or no
pledges or anything like that to get involved. That's good.
You don't have to sell drugs.
Right. Yeah, you don't have to.
Somebody.
You don't have to murder anyone.
No. That's right, yeah.
No, it's great. Like, really, it's beginners, it's experts. We have women of every riding ability, of every age, of every size, from every economic, like you name it, we've got that woman in our club.
And every type of motorcycle,
Every type of motorcycle. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't matter.
We've got dirt bikes. We have street bikes, dual sports. Everything.
That's awesome. Well, I was going to say, I want to get into some of the events that you guys do, but before we do that, I want to talk to you a little bit about this recent study that came out, and it said that about 19% of the motorcycling world was female now, and I wanted to kind of get some of your perspective on that, because I feel like a little bit as an outsider that organizations like the Rainier Ravens are a big part of this, where they are so open. And it's kind of like you get one, you get two, because there's a friend, right? And all of a sudden, this starts to increase the numbers. But have you guys seen this study? And what has been your personal experience here in the Pacific Northwest over your riding careers? What have you witnessed as far as demographic change and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it's hard because there are a lot more women that are out there riding. But we don't see a lot of them in the Pacific Northwest just because, you know, they're the newer riders tend to go out on just the sunny days.
Sure.
You know, I myself kind of am like a squirrel. I like to come out when it's sunny. And
then when they realize they need a navigator, they go to the Rainier Ravens, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's also, it's hard to find gear. It's hard to find the proper, it's hard as a new rider because we're the minority.
Sure.
To kind of get out there and to find other things. We are seeing more women at a lot of the motorcycle events, like Backfire Moto. You're starting to see more and more women encouraged to attend these events and feel like they're welcomed
right.
at the events. Like, you don't have to be there with, you know, a sponsor that's there to take you.
A good way to diplomatically put it, a sponsor, right?
Exactly. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But I see it at all of the, I go to, you know, Dream Roll. I've been to Babes Ride Out.
Right.
Even just the local events, like there's the Tulip Ride that mm-hmm. is with the Seattle Humane, and you're starting to see more and more female riders there every single year, and even noticing it in my own circles
right.
too. Like, outside of the Ravens, there's other people that are like, hey, I've noticed that you've been riding. I've really wanted to get into that. How do I get into it? How do I do that?
And so has that been your experience as well then, Lisa, where do you feel like that number of, you know, 19% or let's just say 15 to 20%, do you feel like that's pretty accurate over the last 2 or 3 years?
I definitely think there's been an increase.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is due to a lot of these more female-centered events that are happening so that women know, oh, hey, like, I can do this too. Like, it's okay for me to – I've wanted to do this for a long time. It's okay for me to do this.
Right.
So I think that is helping. But I also – it's interesting because I think that my perspective is skewed because I ride mostly with women. And okay. so when I get out – and I'm doing other events or I'm seeing other people, like, I actually notice the absence of women. So it's still very, very much like way more dudes than women. There are more women now, but it definitely is still, you know, a bit more skewed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think are some of the biggest hurdles maybe? Because I'm sure that we all, just as humans, right, we see the exciting videos or we think about just, you know, taking off on our motorcycle for a couple of weeks. I think that's universally attractive, right? That's just part of sort of the human experience. So what do you think specifically, you know, as women riders, and I hate to harp on this so much, but I am very curious, what are some of the hurdles? I mean, what are some of the more specific hurdles you think that if people are out there listening, you know, maybe you can help sort of guide them along, you know, what are some things where you can see some of the walls that are early in the stage of a motorcycling career
oh, sure.
to kind of hop over, yeah.
Yeah, there are quite a few.
Sure.
I would say the first one starts with buying a bike.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. being a woman in a motorcycle shop, and just, this is not true of every single shop. There are definitely really great people out there that run shops and that are very kind to women. But I've had a lot of experiences in motorcycle shops that have made it very difficult for me because you're treated like you don't know what you're talking about.
I gotcha.
What are you here? Is your husband here or are you here? They always talk to the guy first rather than me.
Right.
It's really frustrating. There are actually some shops I will not go back to.
Oh, wow.
Because I have been treated so poorly.
Yeah.
So, and having that experience, especially if you're a first time rider, can be very discouraging. And so that's a hurdle. Like, finding a shop where you feel like you're heard, like you matter, and like they really want to do it for you. So that's the first thing. The second thing is finding a bike that fits.
Right.
I'm pretty short. And finding a bike that fits me has been a challenge. And not really knowing a lot of people and not really knowing a lot about bikes when I first started out, you know, it's been difficult to figure out, okay, where do I fit in this? What kind of bike do I want? Like, that in itself has been difficult. And then finding gear is very difficult as a woman because obviously most of the gear has always been made for men.
Definitely.
And that's shifting, that's changing.
Yeah.
There are definitely a lot more options now than there were like 5-10 years ago. A lot more women are starting motorcycle gear shops and companies to help us all find what we need and what fits. Because obviously gear fits us a lot differently than it does guys. Yeah. So finding good gear that fits well is another hurdle that you have to deal with. And then just finding a place, so like figuring out like, who do I want to ride with and where do I want to go? I think that probably is true for everyone who rides.
Sure. Yeah.
But I think it can be a little bit more intimidating as a woman,
mm-hmm.
In more of a male centric sport.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, I got a couple of follow-up questions on that, but do you have anything that you want to add to that, Anna?
Yeah, I think with social media, just the boom of social media,
sure.
like Instagram and Facebook, we're seeing a lot more images of women on motorcycles. So there's more, I think we've kind of gone over that loop of,
yeah.
you know, now we can say, hey, women can ride. I think the hard part is that a lot of women don't identify with the women that are famous on Instagram that are riding bikes. You know, they're at, like, the body type isn't the same, or I don't look the same on that
Definitely.
Bike. Kind
of
like
course, yeah.
Lisa was
I don't have
about.
The same amount of tattoos.
Yeah, I don't right. have the same amount of tattoos.
Is that required? Do
exactly.
we need to have those? These are fair
as
questions.
Long as it's got to be a black raven, right? And
then you can, yeah. So I think we still have to identify not role models in the industry, but
sure.
people that you can look up to and be like, oh, you ride that style of bike. Like, I'm really into that. I want to do that.
Right.
You know, one of the Ravens, Ruth Belcher, she went with 12 other women and rode around Pakistan
nice.
On
so
250s.
Amazing.
And it was amazing. And
That's
it was
an incredible story. Yeah.
One of those events that other women can look at and be like, you did that. I can do that too,
right.
you know, and just kind of publicizing these types of events, these types of movements, and these other women that might not be that model, you know, looking, you know, type of person that's
yeah.
posing sexily on the motorcycle. It's just an average woman that is out there
right.
riding on a bike and wrenching on a bike, and you can do it too. It's just going to take time to learn.
Sure. Well, that's one of the things that you mentioned, like social media, and you're here sporting a Babes Ride Out hat.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things when you look like at their Instagram and that kind of thing that I think is really neat is it is very inclusive. Like you see like all different types of motorcycles, all different types of, you know, body shapes and sizes and ages and everything. So I can imagine that that would be something that could be pretty inspiring for a lot of young riders
out there.
We're gonna take a little break because we got to do that, and then we'll be right back.
Support for the Soundwriters Show is provided in part by
Seattle Cycle Center. As more and more shops discontinue sales of apparel and aftermarket gear, Seattle Cycle Center continues to provide a wide selection of everything you need for your next ride. Family-owned and operated for more than 30 years, Seattle Cycle Center is your destination for helmets, jackets, pants, boots, gloves, rain gear, and much more. Visit their store on Aurora Avenue soon.
Hi, this is Whitney from Kirkland, Washington. My favorite place to ride is in the Lake Wenatchee area.
Hey, this is Scott with Langless Leathers, and you're listening to The Soundwriter Show.
Soundwriter Show here with the Rainier Ravens with Ann and Lisa. So I want to pick up where we left off on the other side of the break here. And one of the things that I wanted to get from each of you is just a quick positive shout out from maybe a shop that you've had a good experience with. We never want to call it any of the negative here on the show. But do you have a good shop in Washington that you guys do like to visit?
Yeah, so Triumph in Seattle.
Sure,
over
Triumph
there on
Seattle,
Greenlight.
Yeah.
They're amazing. They have a great women's section. There's women that work in the shop.
Awesome.
They're very supportive. Every time I've gone into the shop, they greet you with a smile.
Right.
They kind of help you with all of the items that you're looking for. They've got great sales a lot of the time
yeah.
on a lot of their gear. And they treat the Ravens really, really well there.
Yeah,
so,
beautiful floor space there, too.
Yeah.
And how about you, Lisa?
I'd want to give a shout out to our friends over at Moto Shed.
Nice.
John and Richie over there at Moto Shed have done some amazing wrenching events for us where
Definitely.
They let us get in there and wrench on bikes and learn. We've done everything from taking tires on and off to, you know, changing brake fluid to we've done all sorts of different crazy things. They helped me change my chain out for the first time. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
And they never make you feel small.
And, you know, I feel like a lot of times, and even just for me as a new rider, I think that was the biggest hurdle was – what happens when I break down and I'm by myself,
yeah.
right? So it's like getting over those early sort of stages of level one, level two service.
You get over that hurdle like every month, don't you?
Hey, my motorcycle's bulletproof. It rarely breaks down. So. But let's talk about motorcycles, right? Because you mentioned, Lisa, that you started on the TU250X, the Suzuki. And I feel like that's a great beginner motorcycle for anybody. Would you recommend that to new riders?
Definitely. Yeah. I love it. I actually won't sell it because I love it so much.
I have a motorcycle like that, too.
It's so good. I love that bike. And it is light enough, and it maneuvers really well.
Right.
And granted, you know, it can be a little sketch on the freeway, but it's totally doable.
Sure.
And, I mean, I've ridden that thing up over Washington Pass. Sorry, all the cars that had to pass me. I've taken it down to southern Utah and ridden around in the desert on it. Like, that thing will go anywhere.
It's a beast.
It's a fantastic
bike. It is. It's a great motorcycle. And then how about you, Anne? I know you mentioned that you're a Moto Guzzi fan and you ride a V7. Where do you feel like that ranks for new riders, or maybe even as a second bike? I think that's a great option, too.
Yeah, it was my first bike.
Okay.
Yeah, so I started on a 750, and that's the great thing about the Moto Guzzi. Now, I'm also 5'8", so I have a very long inseam. I can sit on the bike flat-footed. I'm very comfortable. It's the arm height. Everything is comfortable for me on that bike. But for me as a new rider, it wasn't that it was too much power. It wasn't. It kind of grew with me, and I was able to open it up more and more on my experiences, you know. And it was a perfect bike for a beginner to start on, because just everything is very basic.
Right, it is. It's a dead simple motorcycle, but it is a fantastic motorcycle.
It's great and beautiful, and it's fun to pull up into like motorcycle events, because my husband has his customized bike, but everybody stops to look at mine just because you don't see Moto Guzzis very
often. That's true. Yeah, they're much less popular here in the Pacific Northwest than say BMWs, which you mentioned your husband rides. So, so let's talk a little bit about some of the events that you guys do throughout the year, because you mentioned Moto Shed, and I know you've had some events there over the years. What sort of, if people are listening and they're like, hey, we want to come and check this Ravens thing out, what would be a good event or place to come and do that?
Yeah, you know, we do a little bit of everything, especially depending on the time of year. We have monthly meetings on the first Saturday of every month down at Slim's. And that's kind of in South Seattle,
Last Chance, right?
Yeah, it's they're so great there. And so it's a good chance to come and just get to know the ladies and just kind of hear what we're up to.
Sure.
But we do everything from axe throwing to pie making.
All right.
Depending on the time of year. We do rides every month if the weather suits. And then we have our big camp out at the end of August, which this will be our fifth camp out this next year. We're so excited. It's a fantastic event. We've had up to, I think last year there were 98 women at the camp out. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful, wonderful time.
Is that BYOA, bring your own axe, if you're going to be throwing at the camp out? Or?
Usually, okay. Yeah. We have one raven who we nicknamed Hatchet because she brings her own axe to
like
cut.
It.
We have a giant block of cheese that she cuts every year with her axe.
You got to do it, yeah. If you're going to cut the cheese, you got to bring your own axe, right?
Yeah.
Anything to add to that, Anne? Any favorite events that you have throughout the year? Any events maybe that you're hoping that the Ravens will have in the next year?
Yeah, I think it's also – so there's the Raven-sponsored events that we host, but also there are Ravens that show up to other events in the area. So
cool.
Like I mentioned, Backfire Moto, you can always – every time I go, I can always find another Raven wearing the sweatshirt and just go. I know I have somebody to hang out at there, or Pistons and Pints, and just a lot of other local events that are happening that the Ravens help support, and then they also help support the Ravens as well.
Right. Well, you know, you guys each talked a little bit about how you got into motorcycling, and I want to wind up a little bit on this, in that, you know, there are a lot of men riders out there who would love for their significant others to be riders with them, because then there's no dispute over where to take vacations, right? Everybody's like, hey, let's get on the motorcycle and
go. Moto camp,
What sort of thoughts do you have for those guys out there who want to get, you know, their girlfriends or their wives into riding? Is that something that you think you would do in-house, or would you outsource that training? What would be maybe some of your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, definitely she needs to want to do it, right? Like, don't force her to do it,
because
that's never bueno. But once she's interested in wanting to do it, it's probably best to outsource that, just in case you want to keep the relationship intact. there are a lot of great resources for that.
Sure.
But then, you know, go and attend some moto events together and, you know, do those things together, but also help her find her own place in that. Don't make it so that she has to be attached with you to have that motorcycle experience, because she's going to love it a lot more
right.
if it is for her.
Definitely. I think that's great advice. Yeah. And how about you, Ann?
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely taking the safety rider course and, you know, if it's the first time you've ever been on the bike before, maybe not take the exam one before, like send her to one of the earlier ones just so she can get a good feel for the bike.
Sure.
I am very strong-willed. And so if my husband sat there and tried to tell me like all the parts of the bike, I would just tune him out and like get frustrated. And so having somebody else teach me was, I was like, oh yeah, this is great. Okay. This is just like riding a dirt bike. Totally, totally easy.
Right.
And then, you know, it's been nice. What I would say is also encourage them to ride with other people. Both my husband's riding and my riding have grown just because we've both been riding with other people separately. And then when we come back together, we teach each other what it was that we learned. It
makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And so it gives us a commonality of conversation, but also allows us to be our own rider and our own person. And so that way we know what we like to do, what we don't like to do.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has different riding styles.
Well, and ultimately motorcycling is about independence, right?
Exactly.
You know, so that's the whole idea. So you want to make sure that you're, you know, any rider is nurturing that as much as possible, because that's kind of why we all get into it. And I know I told you I was going to get you out on that, but real quick, if each of you has a New Year's resolution, because this is the January show, of a new skill that you'd like to work on, or something, maybe a new rider training course that you'd like to take in 2019, I'd love to hear that.
Well, personally, I want to get better at going faster.
I like that. Yeah.
I mean, and honestly, it's because I rode my 250 for so long.
Yeah.
Switching over to my Bonnie has been fabulous, but I'm not super comfortable yet going as fast as I really want to go.
Sure, it's a big
and
difference.
So, yeah, just learning how to be more comfortable going fast in the turns, learning how to do that safely.
You're talking about going the speed limit.
Yes, of course.
Right.
Of course. My speed limit.
Track days too, right?
Speed limit of the bike.
Yeah. And there's some, you know, there's some amazing classes and courses out there that I've been looking at, just not only for the Ravens, but for me to get better at that.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. And how about you, Ann?
Yeah, I want to get back on a dirt bike, and I want to go out and do like a couple, just feel what it's like. That way it'll help me be a better street rider, and also a little bit of fun to just kind of open up out in the dirt and
throw a few rooster tails.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah So that's my goal for next year.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I can't thank you guys enough for being on the show today. That was really some terrific insight, and I hope that we'll have the opportunity to maybe help support some of your events in the coming year here as well. So on that note, thanks to Lisa and Ann from the Rainier Ravens for
thank
being on the Sound Rider
Thank you.
Show.
Thanks so much.
Yeah,
and
for
looking forward to seeing you guys on the road in 2019.
Definitely.
All right.
We're going to take a little break. When we come back, Derek and I have some tips and tricks.
Support for the Sound Rider Show is provided in part by
Valentine Motorworks, Seattle's independent service shop specializing in BMW motorcycles and beyond. Call or visit them to discuss your next service or restoration project soon. Find them online at valentinemotorworks.com.
Hi, my name's Greg from Seattle. I ride a Husky 701, and one of my favorite places to ride is the Olympic Peninsula.
This is Ryan Hemans with Parts Unlimited, and you're listening to the Sound Rider Show.
Back on the Sound Rider Show, January 2019. And we never seem to be at a loss for tips and tricks. So, Derek, what do you have for the inaugural tip of 2019?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to harken back to a tough lesson that I learned in the end of August in 2018. And I was coming home from the rally in the Gorge, and it happened to be a little rainy that day, and I didn't have my good rain gear with me, so I stopped at Walmart and I bought some frog togs. You know what these
Ooh,
are?
Yes, I do.
And so the frog togs, well, I think that they work pretty good with the exception of when you ride at highway speeds.
That's right.
And when I got home, those things were so shredded from the wind, torn apart. It looked like I had been drug across a bed of nails because the wind had just whipped those things around and just split them open. And they did the job for about a half an hour, and they got me home, although it was, you know, about a 3.5 or 4 hour ride on the old DR. But here's a tip. Post-holiday sales, they start to come on here in the next couple of weeks. Just keep an eye out for some discounted good rain gear because, you know.
Not frog togs.
Not frog togs. You know, something motorcycle specific because you probably, you know, won't be doing a ton of wet riding if you don't already have good rain gear. But when it comes around in the summertime, it might be nice to have something small and compact that you can roll down into your, you know, your tail bag or your panniers or whatever it may be. So keep an eye out for good rain gear.
I can just hear some of the listeners talking right now, and one of them saying, well, hey, man, just take a 55-gallon garbage bag with you. That was one of the listeners there.
Sure.
That doesn't work so good. Another listener is saying, well, you know, Frog Talks makes a motorcycle version. Well, I know they did. I don't know if they do anymore.
I don't know.
But they're very floppy and flappy in the wind. Now, the reason for that is original story of Frog Talks is that they were designed for EMTs in the field. So that if they had a messy crash that they had to deal with, they could just glove up and put the frog togs on and not get all that blood all over themselves. And so what those frog togs did is it allowed them the mobility they needed to work with the patient, to push the cart around, whatever.
Interesting.
And they weren't really originally designed at all for riding out on a motorcycle at 60 miles an hour.
Well, that is a little bonus history lesson here on the January Sound Rider Show, because I had no idea. But it's funny that you say that, because what I felt like as soon as I put that thing on is I looked at myself in my rearview mirror, and I felt like I was in a hazmat suit.
You were!
And it was tan, so it looked like it.
I thought you said you felt like you were your own EMT.
Yeah, that's right. Well, just in case, you know, better to be safe than sorry. But, yeah, you know, particularly, and, you know, probably maybe a little bonus tip there, just having rain gear that fits well too, because the high speed flapping of the wind can really do a number on your gear, and it certainly did on my $18 frog talk. So, yep. But what about you, Tom? What do you got this month?
Well, my tip comes right behind yours, having to do with raining.
Okay,
and it's called take your training when it's raining. I was looking at a training website the other day, and they said, you know, here's what you need to know when you come to class. And they said, if it's raining, we teach a class. We don't not teach when it's raining. And then they went on to explain that, you know, what better way to get some motorcycle training than in the rain? Because you're going to get pushed a little bit harder, you know, mentally by having to deal with the wet and all that. It's not going to be a beautiful sunny day. But that's, you know, sometimes what you encounter when you're really out riding your bike in the field. So if it's raining, go and take your training anyways.
I like it, and I couldn't agree more. And, of course, if it is raining, make sure that you don't go with frog togs.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Get some actual legitimate gear.
Because you'll shred them on the way to the training.
That's right. But, you know, that's actually an excellent reminder just in general, because, like, I was on the Cascade Motorcycle Safety website the other day. They're doing courses January, Gymkhana, all through January.
Yeah.
So if you're looking to get some education, now's a good time to do it, where maybe you're thinking, you know what, I can't ride over the pass or whatever, but I still want to get out and ride. Go do a little education. Why not?
And, you know, this has been a fairly mild winter, I think.
It has. No snow.
We haven't had those freezing days. Even the corners and stuff aren't all full of gravel and salt
right.
And all that. So, yeah, get some training under your belt. Obviously, if you're already a trained rider, go and do an advanced course. It's New Year's.
That's right.
Get yourself moving
dive in
a better
yeah.
direction.
Enjoy it. I agree.
All right. That's our show for the month. I want to thank the ladies from the Rainier Ravens for joining us today.
Great interview.
And I'm already looking forward to the February show. That's it, huh?
That's
it. All right.
I'll outro on that.
We'll see you in February.
See you in February on the Sound Rider Show.
The Sound Rider Show was made possible by today's sponsors and the patience of everyone else involved, which is not to say we're doctors. Reproduction of this program in part or in whole is not legal without the express written consent of the podcast owner. But please be sure to share the link with all your Facebook friends. This program is a production of Mixed Media. The content and views of today's guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of any major media conglomerate anywhere else in the world, including CBS, NBC, ABC, MotoGP, the BBC, PBS, NPR, the Discovery Network, or the Cartoon Channel. See you next time on The Sound Rider Show.